It's time now for a consumer protection edition of On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine with certified financial planner Kevin McKinley, who's ready to share information with you on protecting your finances and answer your personal finance questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Kevin McKinley is a certified financial planner, managing member of McKinley Money, LLC. He joins us from Wisconsin Public Radio Studios in Eau Claire. Hello, Kevin.
Hello, Joy.
And you made it to the studios, no problemo?
Oh, I woke up this morning, I looked out the window, I saw the snow, I ran downstairs, I turned on the TV to the local news, and then I started watching the scroll going across the bottom of the screen, and I kept on trying to see if any of the WPR shows were canceled today because of the snow. And On Your Money wasn't there, so I got dressed and came into the
studio. That's right. No On Your Money closings today. We are here, rain, shine, and all those postal carrier things, too.
We won't have to make it up in the summer anyway. It's good news.
That's right. Well, I'm glad you made it in safely. I know that roads are slick, especially in western Wisconsin, and we are going to be seeing anywhere from 6 to 12 inches of snow for much of southern and western Wisconsin. So anyway, Kevin, this is National Consumer Protection Week, and I know that we are going to be devoting much of the show to issues that could affect our finances, including a recent alert from the Federal Trade Commission. What's the alert all about?
They took a huge sample of credit reports. And this has been an issue for quite some time, and they wanted to quantify how big the problem was. And they found that 20% of the credit reports that they sampled had minor errors on them, mostly incorrect items that weren't drastically affecting people's credit. But 5% had credit reports with serious errors in them that did affect people's credit quite a bit. Now, that might sound like relatively small numbers, but 5% of the 200 million credit reports out there is 10 million Americans who have some kind of serious error on their credit report.
Yeah, so what kinds of problems can errors like this cause?
Well, it obviously is going to make it more difficult to get a loan. You're probably not going to get the same terms you might get if your credit were good, if you can get the credit at all, but it also can raise your insurance rates. Many people come to us and say, you know, I don't really care what my credit report says because I don't plan on borrowing any money in the future. Your homeowner's insurance premiums, your auto insurance premiums, and yes, someday even your health insurance and health care can be affected by a negative credit report. And it can also affect your job hunting. About a third of large employers do some kind of credit check on people they're hiring. And the problem with the errors is not so much that you can't fix it, it's that you can't fix it quickly enough before it makes a difference, and especially if you are applying for something that the success of which is predicated on having a good credit score.
Yeah, so how do you find out if there are any errors on your credit report?
You can get one report free from each of the major bureaus by going to annualcreditreport.com. You get one free per bureau per year. There are three big credit bureaus, and each one of them will give you your report free once per year. Now, a smart way to do this is to get one report now from each bureau, and then a year from now, start getting the second one, and then rotate it every 4 months. So you kind of get one on a window free without having to pay for it. You can pay for it, but it's going to cost you about $20 or $30 or so to get the report. Now, there are other services out there, like freecreditreport.com. Shockingly, that's actually not your free credit report. They give you your free credit report as long as you sign up for a credit monitoring service that can cost about $5 to $10 per year. It's kind of hard to cancel the service. So go to annualcreditreport.com to get your credit report free, one per bureau per year. And we'll have a link up to that website at our website, onyourmoney.com, later on today.
So once you look at your credit report, how do you figure out if there's an error on it?
It's kind of tough. You have to go back and match it through the actual history of the payments and through the current status of the balances. Oftentimes you might see that there's an outstanding balance where there actually is none, or that there was a late payment that actually wasn't a late payment. You didn't receive a notice for it. send the dispute to that credit bureau in writing. And at consumer.ftc.gov, they not only have information on how to dispute an inaccurate credit report, but they have a booklet which provides you a template for the letter so you can just copy and paste it and put your own data in. And then within the booklet as well, it also tells you how you can help build your credit score back up if you do have a lower score. And it's the truth. It's not just an error that's hurting you.
Can you give me an example, Kevin, of types of errors? I mean, why are there errors on my credit report anyway?
Well, there's a lot of data flying around between you and your bank and the credit card companies and then back to the bureau again. So the more of these transactions, and I'm sure there are trillions of transactions in a given year just in America, obviously something's going to go wrong. And there's really no incentive to ferret out the truth until you find it out yourself. And even when you do find the truth, it's still sometimes difficult to fix it because, you know, you're trying to prove a negative. You're trying to prove, no, I actually didn't miss a payment. So at least at the worst case scenario, you'll get it on there that you are disputing a particular mark on that report.
Yeah, so that's what I would want to contact the credit report place and say, I didn't miss that payment, and let me write a letter to that effect.
That's right.
Kevin McKinley is the managing member of McKinley Money, LLC, a registered investment advisor with offices in Eau Claire and Madison. Kevin does not intend to provide personalized investment advice through this broadcast and does not represent that the securities or services discussed are suitable for any investor. Investors should consult with their financial advisors prior to making any investment decisions. That being said, if you have a question for Kevin, 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. And it is time now for the On Your Money email bag. And Andy in Verona asks, is there a financial calculator or planner to calculate when I or my spouse should begin Social Security payments? Kevin? Hello, Kevin. Are you there?
I am here. I just had to step out to shovel for a minute. there's a great calculator industry kind of growing right now for Social Security, which it's really important that these have come online because there's really no good individual advice out there on people who are going to advise it. Now, as a financial planner, we do incorporate Social Security planning into our practice, but if you want to just put your numbers in yourself and try to figure out when it's best to take it, it's difficult to do it. And this could be, in retirement, a $250,000 proposition to the average full-time worker. And even for a stay-at-home spouse, it's about $125,000 to $150,000, depending on the situation. So you can go to ssa.gov. That's the Social Security Administration website to get your raw data, if you will, and they'll give you lots of information about what you'll get if you wait, et cetera, if you keep working. But they won't give you any real advice or guidance on what you need to do and when you should actually take the Social Security.
So is there anywhere he can go to get more detailed projections?
Yeah, there are several out there, but three of them stand out. SSIncomePlanner.com costs about $10. It's a very simple one, but a very affordable one, and that can give you some idea of the different decisions that you have in front of you and what the cost and benefits are doing it. MaximizeMySocialSecurity.com is a better one for $40. And then probably the leader in the field right now is SocialSecuritySolutions.com. That costs between $50 to $250, but for the higher price range, you actually get an individual to talk to who can give you some more personal advice about what you might want to look at. And then we'll put those links up at onyourmoney.com and including the SSA.1. But again, it's such a small cost that you might as well try it for this huge thing. You know, the average Social Security check right now in retirement is about $1,100 or so. So for the, a couple days worth of Social Security checks, you can find out some answers that might mean tens of thousands of dollars of difference for you over your retirement.
Well, so what are some of the standard strategies that Andy could follow?
Well, typically what they'll tell you is wait, because you might be eligible at 62 to take it, or even sooner in some cases. But the longer you wait, the higher the check is going to be, whether it's at after 62 or at normal retirement age, which right now is 66 for most people, and all the way up to 70. And after 70, it doesn't make any sense to wait because the checks don't get any bigger. But keep in mind that with that higher check you get by waiting, you're also one day or year or however long you wait closer to dying and losing your benefit. Another little bit more esoteric strategy is where you have a married couple and one is a much higher earner than the other. And this is the file and suspend strategy, meaning that when the higher earner is normal retirement age, he or she files for Social Security but then suspends it. Then his or her spouse is eligible for the spousal benefit at that time, and then his or her benefit, the higher earner, keeps marching upward until age 70. That will give them more money over the long run. Now, keep in mind, these are good ideas on paper, but in the real world, you have lots of other factors that can affect this and maybe make waiting not the best idea.
Yeah, so what would you advise instead?
In most cases, I prefer that people actually take it sooner rather than later. First of all, you do have to live to be at least 78 and usually 80 to make waiting worthwhile, because you're giving up checks in the time that you're waiting. And also, most people who are initiating Social Security are retiring, and so they're replacing a lost paycheck. That Social Security check not only can have a nice financial benefit by coming in on the same day every single month, but also there's an emotional benefit to knowing that, you know, you only have 8 more days until that $1,200 or whatever comes in. So as soon as it does, you can replenish your checking account. It helps you preserve liquid assets. If you have some money in an IRA or a 403B or your savings account that you'd otherwise have to draw down, it's usually better to actually take the Social Security now and preserve those assets for, you know, better investment opportunities down the road or some emergency, whatever. And other than taking it sooner rather than later, I'd like to see people try to manage their situation before they initiate Social Security so that they can lower their taxes down the road. And what that typically means is converting IRAs to Roth IRAs before you initiate Social Security, so that down the road, Social Security won't be made taxable by distributions from Roth IRAs. Roth IRA distributions are the only source of income that right now, anyway, do not affect Social Security as it relates to taxation.
I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Kevin McKinley, certified financial planner and managing member of McKinley Money, LLC. This is a consumer protection edition of On Your Money, and there's plenty of room for your personal finance questions, too, at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Coming up during this edition of On Your Money, we'll have some advice regarding a very popular investment option. And we will also talk about a warning to taxpayers to be on the lookout for someone who is trying to take their identity. So protection against identity theft and tax refund check theft. That's coming up. This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine with financial planner Kevin McKinley. If you have a question for Kevin, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Coming up, the risks of a very popular investment option. That's coming up during this edition of On Your Money. To the phones now and your questions. Mark in Wausau is with us now. Hello, Mark.
Good morning.
Morning.
My question is, if a person does retire at 62 and living in Wisconsin, what taxes are withheld from that Social Security check? Your guest mentioned $1,200 a month. I was just wondering what taxes may be withheld.
Do you mean income taxes, Mark, or what?
Is there more than federal and state withheld?
Well, if you're referring to penalties, you may actually lose some of the money because of you're working and earning money above and beyond the limit, which right now is about $14,300 or something like that. But other than that, no, the only taxes that you could have deducted from that are your normal income taxes that you'd otherwise have. Now, once you get eligible for Medicare, then often people have their Medicare premium withheld from the Social Security check as well. But if you're not 65 yet, that won't be an issue.
Well, that's interesting. Just one more quick question. Can a person earn up to half of that? You mentioned $1,200 a month. Can a person earn up to half and still receive your $1,200 check?
Up of half of $1,200?
Yes.
Yeah, actually, the earnings limit is, like I said, I think it's about $14,300 or something like that. And then if you have earnings over that and you're under the normal retirement age, which in your case is probably 66, what happens is every dollar over that limit that you make, or every $2 over that limit, you lose a dollar in Social Security benefits for it. So it reduces your benefits, but only on the amount over that $14,000 limit. And then, even then, Mark, once you reach normal retirement age, you actually do get that money back in the very complex formula and the way they calculate your benefits for it. So it's not completely lost. But again, it's only on you could make, you know, $1,200 a month if you wanted to from earnings, and then another $1,200 from Social Security, and it would not affect your benefits at all. It might affect your income taxes a little bit, because Social Security might then be figured into the formula for income taxes. But otherwise, no, it won't reduce your benefits in and of itself.
That's interesting. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much for the call, Mark. Next we go
finally,
to...
Finally, we had someone find the show interesting. This is great. Good.
Jean in Appleton is with us now. Hi, Jean. Do you find the show interesting?
Yes, I do.
Oh, good. See, there we got two of them, Kevin.
All right.
Okay, I have a question about credit ratings, and I have listened to all your advice. I have got my credit reports from Annual Credit Report, and I'm frustrated by the fact that with AAA auto insurance, I have a rating of 66. The top rating is 70. And I'm wondering, is age a factor? Because my record is accident-free, I'm debt-free, I have good income and net worth, and all my payments on my credit report are shown as made on time, and there is nothing negative on it.
But that's for car insurance?
Yes. So why can't I get a top rating?
Have you asked the good people at AAA why that might be?
I have, and they say, well, you have to get your credit report and find out from them. Well, I did all of that, and I got reams of paper, but nothing ever explained to me why I'm not at a top rating.
In terms of credit rating, a lot of people are surprised to find out that, especially if they're very diligent payers of their bills owed, that their credit rating isn't quite as high as what they might expect. And the reason being is that the credit score, in many cases, is not just an indicator of how responsible you are. It's also an indication of how good of a customer you are, meaning that if you borrow money from a particular lender, will you then leave some of the balance outstanding so that it earns interest? And so sometimes paying off your bills on time makes you look very responsible. It's a good idea. It saves you interest, et cetera. But it might diminish your credit score somewhat because you're not earning any interest for the credit card company. Now, I don't think it's worth it to leave balances outstanding and accruing interest just to bump up your credit score a little bit. And quite frankly, I don't think that a slightly lower credit score is going to affect your auto insurance premiums that much. But one thing I do, Jane, is tell AAA you're going to shop around for other places for auto insurance. A lot of them are more than willing to talk to you. And if you haven't looked around in about 8 or 10 years, usually it's a good idea to start looking, because you're probably going to save some money.
Yeah, I guess I'm a little confused, Kevin, and I'm thinking maybe listeners are too. Why would Jean's credit report have anything to do with her rating for auto insurance?
Maybe they think that people with poor credit are going to be late paying their bills, and so they're going to be rushing around town trying to get the check.
Yeah.
No, no. It's actually, there's a Venn diagram or a correlation between people who have a poor credit rating and have a bad, or I should say more probable accident history. Now, a lot of times you'll see this in legislation will be introduced to say we don't want credit scores to be included into these types of calculations for auto insurance or homeowners insurance or whatever. But the insurance companies are just trying to sort out the risks as best as they possibly can and obviously make as much money as they can. But it means that people with good credit scores are getting reductions on their cost of auto insurance and their homeowners insurance because there is a correlation between having be able to handle credit responsibly and not making lots of claims on your car insurance and your homeowners insurance.
Yeah. Jean?
Yeah, I have checked with my agent for other insurance companies, but it always ends up that they come back and say, "Well, you're better off with this with your home on it as well."
Yeah,
but they
okay.
have
that could be
other companies. Yeah,
that could be, but
so
you might want to do it on your own too.
Pardon?
You might want to do it on your own too, and just
yeah,
you might want to call
yeah.
some of the.
Yeah, thank you very much, Jean. I'm sorry that we I was a little bit confused as to why she's just saying that she's got perfect credit and a good credit score, but still was not top rated when it came to the auto insurance situation. So that's why I was confused. So anyway, Jean, thanks very much for the call. Good luck with that. Have you ever had an error on your credit report? How was it resolved? Do you have another personal finance question for Kevin? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Gretchen in McFarland is with us. Hello, Gretchen.
Hi. I recently got my tax return back, and it was sizable. And what I want to do is I want to set aside chunks of money for expenses throughout the year that I either know will come up or I expect could come up, like car repairs, things like that. And I was wondering, what is the best way to do that? Because I'm not the greatest at managing my money, and I don't want to have a bunch of bank accounts out there, specifically tagged for those things.
Sure. You've got two concepts going here, Gretchen, which are the foundations of being financially responsible. One is self-actualization, meaning you admit it. We all have faults when it comes to lots of different subjects, but especially when it comes to money. We either spend too much or we don't spend enough and we don't enjoy life. And you've come to the realization. They say, hey, I'm not good at this, so what can I do to, it's kind of like saying, hey, I want to lose some weight, so I'm not going to buy a dozen donuts every single day. So good for you for coming to that realization. One of the better ways to do this is to compartmentalize of what you're talking about, but there's it's a little tougher when you don't want to have a bunch of different checking accounts outstanding. Some financial institutions, and specifically it seems like credit unions, have become aware of this and said, well, we understand you don't want to have 200 different accounts, but you have this compartmentalization strategy that you'd like to implement, and they've allowed people to break the money down into separate segments, into different, jars or areas or will. There's a personal finance program out there, though, called Envelopes, and I think it's Mvelopes. And I'll check on it and go to onyourmoney.com and put the link up later on today. But that allows you to do this on your own. And it's basically based on the notion of you might, remember your parents or your grandparents even putting money aside in little pockets of envelopes with the envelope marked rent or groceries or whatever. And that worked for them. And I think it could work for you. But in the digital age, it's a little tougher to do it again, like you say, without opening up the account. So I'll put a link up to that website and check them out. Let us know how it goes for you.
Thanks, Gretchen, for the call. Jim in Green Bay is with us. Hello, Jim.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Kevin, I not only find you interesting, but I find you knowledgeable, witty, and concise.
Good. So are you seeing anyone? Or
yes.
Single?
Yes, I am.
Okay, good.
I've been therapy
I'll buy you
for
a drink.
Past decade, but that's immaterial. I have in my family about $100,000 from a relative that I'm managing for my relative for the next few years, maybe maybe 3 or 4 years. And I'm obviously depressed about the low interest rates. I don't know what to do with this $100,000 for the next, well, maybe 3 years, maybe 4 years, where it's not needed for this person immediately. But how can I best make that grow, please?
You should call Ben Bernanke up and ask him to stop buying treasuries and mortgage-backed securities, because that's what's driving interest rates down to nothing and kind of artificially inflating other assets out there to the point where it creates a lot of risk and, quite frankly, very little reward probably over the long term, and especially over 3 or 4 years. That's the danger zone, because it's very possible that any asset you put into above and beyond CDs right now could drop 20% to 30% in a year, and it would not shock me at all. And that, of course, torpedoes the entire purpose of this. Jim, when the money is going to be used in 3 to 4 years, is it going to be used as a lump sum, or is it going to be pulled out kind of systematically?
It's going to be pulled out systematically.
Okay. I wouldn't be completely adverse to you putting, splitting it up into thirds, maybe going out with a third in a checking account, and just accept the fact that you're not going to get any return on it, but it is going to be safe and it is going to be liquid. And then maybe a third in a longer term CD, like a 5 or a 10 year CD that has a relatively low penalty for early withdrawal. And we're going to be talking about where to find those next week. And then finally, if you wanted some kind of balanced investment fund, like the ones that Vanguard offers, for the last third of the money, that would be a way to possibly get more reward. But again, keep in mind, you have to accept that you could easily lose 20% on the more aggressive options within a given year. So weigh all those out and just understand we're in a low return environment, and unless you're willing to take a lot of risk, you're probably not going to get a lot of return either.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thank you, Jim. I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley, Certified Financial Planner. This is On Your Money. If you have a question for Kevin, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. It's time now for Smart Assets, and the securities industry self-regulatory organization wants investors to know about the risks that may lie within a very popular investment option. What investment option is this, Kevin?
Well, the body was FINRA, and FINRA is an acronym that basically is the financial industry's self-regulatory organization. They took the very rare step of just wanting to make sure that people are aware that money that's pouring into bonds, and more specifically bond funds, in the search for higher yield, may be incurring a lot more risk than what people think they're getting when they're putting the money in there. And Jim's question is held by millions of Americans, and quite frankly, people all over the world right now, of saying, I'd like to get more return on my money above and beyond the safe options. Where should I be going? And they're going into these bond funds. And the FINRA organization said, look, put the money in there if you want, but make sure you're aware of the risk, and specifically as it relates to a word they call duration.
And what is that? Define duration.
Duration is when you buy a bond, it's the length of time until you get your money back. So if you buy a bond that matures in 1 year, that has a relatively short duration. If you buy a bond that matures in 30 years, that has a very long duration. And it applies also to bonds within these bond funds that many people are buying. The longer your duration, generally the more yield you get, but of course then the higher risk you have as well, and especially if and when interest rates rise. And the FINRA people even put a hypothetical example up, said you might be getting a bond that pays 2% right now, and if similar bonds jumped in yield up to 3%, the value of your 2% bond could drop 5 to 10% or more, depending on the duration of it. So if interest rates rise, you could find yourself with a really bad situation on these funds that you thought were safe. And you can find the duration of a particular bond fund by going to the mutual fund's website or going to a site like Morningstar.com. That will also track it for you as well.
And you agree with this concern?
Absolutely. And there are other risks as well besides rising interest rates, especially in corporate bonds and high-yield corporate bonds. If the economy does indeed slow down, many of these issuers of these bonds will have a more difficult time repaying the interest on it, which means the prices may fall. And even if people fear that the bonds may have a harder time getting paid off, they will sell them, and that will also hurt the value of your bond or your bond fund too.
So should people stay away from bonds or bond funds?
Not necessarily. Just make sure you know the risks getting in. And as we mentioned with Jim, know that it's very possible that a 10 to 20% drop could happen, and that can quickly eat away any yield advantage you were getting by sticking your neck out a little bit on the yield curve. But if you want to use it for a small part of your portfolio, and you do have a lot of other cash or CDs within there as well, there are other options out there right now that may have a better risk-reward ratio than many of these bond funds. So as we mentioned with Jim, we'll talk about those next week.
Sounds good. Let's take a couple more calls. Ed in La Crosse is with us. Hello, Ed.
Hello. Yeah, what I was wondering is, when you start drawing Social Security, I'm a little bit older than my wife, and her income, she'd obviously still be working. Can you file separately to not affect that amount of income you can take in while you draw Social Security, at $14,000 you were discussing?
Yeah, that's a great question, Bob. Her earnings do not affect your Social Security from the benefit reduction standpoint, meaning your Social Security benefits will not be reduced just because of her earnings. It's only your earnings. Where you will get affected, possibly, is on the income tax, because if you file jointly, her income will be added to your Social Security income, and then that could boost you up in the higher brackets. But typically, you're better off filing jointly because you get a much more liberal area that won't be taxed under the federal and state income taxes than you would if you were to file separately. So her earnings won't affect your Social Security benefits, and you're still probably better off filing jointly because you'll end up probably paying less income tax between the two of you.
Good luck, Ed. Bob in Duluth is with us now. Hello, Bob.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I jumped on my computer to this annualcreditreport.com, and I was expecting a credit score, but I have to buy the score for $7.95. I didn't know.
Yeah, and I get a piece of that, Bob. So don't disrupt the grift here, okay?
So it's a free report, but not a free score. Are all three the same in that regard?
All three are the same, and that's a great question. I'm glad you asked it. The annualcreditreport.com gives you the free raw data. The score is just a summary that each one of the bureaus uses to give a very quick indication as to how creditworthy you may be to a prospective lender or someone else that might want to use that. And you generally do have to purchase the report to get your score. People typically go to myfico.com. They pay about $15 to $20 or so to get the score. However, one that I've seen and I've watched very closely, and I actually like this one. It's not perfect, but it is free, and that's creditkarma.com, karma with a K, creditkarma.com. You can get a good idea of what your credit score is at creditkarma.com, and there's no cost to it. What they do have on there, though, is advertising that's pitched to you. They say, hey, you know, you've got this particular mortgage out at 4%. Did you know this mortgage is available to you at 3.5%? Could save you $1,000 a year in interest. So if you're comfortable getting, you know, and it's not a bombardment either. It's just a few ads. They're fairly innocuous. But creditkarma.com will give you the free information. But myfico.com is where you go to get the score and pay a little bit of price. And there's still a lot of advertising with that one as well.
Okay, thank you. I wonder if I could ask one other quick question. I have a Series I government bond, and it's about a year old or maybe a year and a half now. Is it worth just keeping that, or does the rate go down as time goes by on those?
I would definitely keep it. Right now, the interest rate on those is about 1.76%, and that interest rate is adjusted every May and November for people who have Series I bonds outstanding. And 1.76% in this day and age is a great yield on something that's so safe, and you don't pay any state taxes on the interest as well. So unless you can find something that's much better out there, and you won't find anything safer, but if you find something with a higher yield, you can pull it out. Now, keep in mind, there is a three-month penalty of interest, Bob, if you pull that out within 5 years of purchase, and then after 5 years, there's no interest penalty on it whatsoever. But otherwise, I would definitely keep that bond unless, you know, you needed the money for an emergency.
Good luck to you, Bob. This is On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine with financial planner Kevin McKinley. We'll get to more of your calls in just a bit. We will also talk about protecting yourself from identity theft and tax refund check theft. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Joy Cardine with financial planner Kevin McKinley. And the federal and state government agencies, there are federal and state government agencies that are warning taxpayers to be on the lookout for identity theft, someone trying to take over their identity. Kevin, what's this all about?
Well, I was originally kind of happy about this because, oh, good, someone else is going to do my taxes for me. I really appreciate this. But it's a big problem. The feds report that in 2008, 48,000 cases of taxpayer identity theft were reported. 48,000. Last year in 2012, 1.2 million with an M. Huge jump. The IRS now has 3,000 employees devoted solely to protecting taxpayers from identity theft. And the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection just issued another release that said they're also seeing more cases of this come up as the tax filing season has begun.
Yeah, so how does this scam work?
Well, the fraudsters get your Social Security number or an employee identification number, and then they quickly file an electronic return for you and then get a refund. They just make up all the numbers and make up enough to get a refund, and then they take that refund and put it in their own bank accounts and get away. And where people are noticing it is they're filing later because most people file in February or March, and they're getting a notice back that says, nope, good news, you already filed. And they said,
no, I
haven't. Right.
So what do you... I didn't file yet, Kevin. Now, what do I do to prevent this from happening?
Well, if you can, file as soon as possible. Don't file your taxes on a public computer like the hotel lobby or something. And even you may want to not use unprotected Wi-Fi if you can help it. You may not want to store any of your data on an accessible site that other people can hack into. You know what? When you store data on a website, it's not a matter of if that website will be hacked. It's a matter of when. So keep that in mind if you have sensitive data stored in the cloud. Know your preparer. Sometimes people have taken their taxes to prepare to whom they were not familiar with and found out that the information leaked out that way, or the preparer was actually guilty of perpetuating the fraud.
Oh, no.
And then watch for your refund. If you are expecting a refund, track it very closely. The IRS allows you to keep an eye on it and to find out where it is. And then as a general information, guard your information very closely. Do not give your Social Security number out to anyone who calls. Don't click on an email that says it's coming from the IRS. You need to fill it in. The IRS will not email you when they contact you for information. And be very careful when you're transmitting data, with the phone calls coming in, and especially when emails try to break up your Social Security number, if you're sending it via an email so that if crooks get in, they have to at least search for the other digits and try to put it together, rather than seeing a number that is easily accessible.
All right. So what if it's too late? What if we file and we're told, good news, you've already filed?
Well, the good news is it's all it means is a hassle and some delays in getting your refund. The IRS is responsible for replacing the lost funds. You are not responsible for it. There's a special form that the IRS has to file it at irs.gov, and the state of Wisconsin has the same process as well, and they're very aware of the problem, and they won't be surprised by it when you do contact them.
1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org if you have a question about your personal finances for certified financial planner Kevin McKinley. And our next caller is David in Sabin. Hi, David.
Well, hello. I've heard of a way to make larger donations to charitable organizations by taking your IRA distribution instead of directly from the IRA account to have it sent to the charitable organization, and that way they get more money or the retiree gets fewer taxes. Is that true?
Yes, sir, David, and I'm glad you asked. It was up in the air right until the end of the year, and actually didn't even get solidified until the beginning of the year, but The way it works is people over the IRA owners, I should say, over the age of 70 and a half are required to take a minimum distribution from the accounts. We talked about it last week. This provision allows you to transfer that RMD directly over to a qualified charity and not have to include it as your income. And many people in this situation do not itemize. And if they don't itemize, they can't take the deduction, the corresponding deduction, on their taxes. So it technically is part of the taxable income. But yes, this allows you to transfer the RMD and then some directly over to the qualified charity and not pay any taxes on it whatsoever. And yes, for 2013, that provision was continued. I'm sure anyone who's interested, if you contact the charity, they'll be more than happy to help you do it. Make sure you get all the information so it can be done properly.
Good luck, David. Katie in Milwaukee is with us now. Hello, Katie.
Good morning. So I have a question about student loans. My husband and I are both in our late 20s, recently finished graduate school, and signed up for the 20-year repayment plans when we started working and our grace periods ended. We have figured out that that's coming to be about 35% of our monthly take-home income, so things are getting really tight when you factor in mortgage and daycare and all of our other bills. So what are the income-based repayment options, and how aggressively should we be trying to pay off our student loans?
Oh, well, okay. Well, that's a tough situation. If it's any consolation, Katie, if you go to your nearest Starbucks and yell out, I said, I'm having trouble repaying my student loans, about two-fourths of the people will say, you bet. Me too, sister. We're right there with you. So, and I'm sorry, Katie, did you say these were federal loans or they're private loans?
They are. They're federal loans.
They're federal loans. Great. So have you gone to the income-based repayment website yet?
Started looking at it, and I guess I'm having trouble understanding the income-based repayment and the income contingent and just trying to figure out what those different options mean.
Okay, you went to ibrinfo.org, right?
I don't know if that was the website, but I'll make sure that
okay.
I do.
Okay, go to ibrinfo.org. That's the site.
Okay.
And for other people out there, I definitely recommend you do this well. And as a rule of thumb, Katie, cash flow is king for a lot of people, but especially people in your situation. So Please pay those off as slowly as you possibly can. Do not worry about the interest. Just make the minimum payments, Whatever is required, and take advantage of the program. This is specifically designed for people in your situation. So Maximizing it to your full benefit that you possibly can. And there are provisions in place where if you do keep up this minimum payment schedule, it's for a long time, it's for several years, but the balance remaining at the end of the time can be forgiven in some instances. So definitely get on the program and then definitely pay it off as slowly as possible. And if you can, try to keep some money set aside in a savings account so that if for some reason you do want or need to pay that off in a hurry, you can hopefully slide that savings over there. But yes, please pay as little as you possibly and legally can to keep your credit in as good standing as possible, but to keep the money free for other things out there. And again, ibrinfo.org, and we'll put that website up at onyourmoney.com later on today.
Good luck, Katie. Thanks for the call. If you have a question for Kevin, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Michelle sent an email. She says, last Thursday, my house was broken into, and my laptop computer, among other things, was stolen. Oh, I'm so sorry, Michelle. My tax returns for the last 2 years were on that computer. I know our Social Security numbers are on those tax returns. What should I do?
This is terrible. Mm-hmm. And it's just one of those things. It's not the end of the world, and it's not, you know, it's... There are a lot of things that can happen that are worse than this, but it just feels awful. And if it's ever happened in the past, it's not only just the violation of someone else in your home who's not supposed to be there, but then your stuff gets taken, and then now you have to think and worry about this for eternity because the Social Security numbers are so important for all financial transactions. A few things here. First of all, I would definitely want you to at least put a fraud alert, contact all of the credit bureaus and tell them what's happened, and put a fraud alert on your report so that if someone's using your Social Security number to try to open credit up, that will trigger a red flag and they'll contact you. And more importantly, what I would do, Michelle, is I'd actually freeze your credit report. And We'll put this link up at onyourmoney.com too, but if you go to tinyurl.com/CRFreeze, we've created the link to each state's procedures for where that the state's residents can freeze their credit report. And that means that no one who doesn't already have a relationship with you can get access to your information to open a new credit card or take out a new loan. So that will definitely help do it. And then just keep that freeze in place. And for people who are concerned about this happening to them, you might want to do that as well. When you freeze your credit report, it costs about $10 to freeze it, costs about another $10 to thaw it. But this is one of the best ways for you to prevent someone else from using your Social Security number for purposes that you would not prefer.
Good to know, and good luck to you, Michelle. Julian in Milwaukee is with us now. Hi, Julian.
Hi, good morning. Kevin, I have a question for you. Sometime last month, I was considering extending one of my credit cards, and I called in, you know, going through the process of verification to do the credit check for to see if they were going to approve me for the extended credit. And during the verification process, they began asking me questions that did not apply to me at all. And when I gave, you know, the answer that it doesn't apply to me, they're like, well, I'm sorry, we can't verify you. I'm like, how do you mean you can't verify me? You know, I am who I am. So I took this up with my bank because credit card and bank are through the same people. And they said this information is provided to them not by the credit bureaus, but by a private third-party entity, and they have no access to it. So basically, there's some phantom third-party entity that has wrong information about me, and it's controlling whether or not I can get credit.
I would guess it's probably one of the – there are a lot of other smaller bureaus out there or services that that also provide this information that aren't straight-up credit bureaus. Have you tried any other institution, Julian?
Yes, I did, as a matter of fact, because I remember, like, maybe 2 years ago, I had tried applying for something new, and it was the online process, and it had a question on it. Was actually the same question. It was basically asking me about a certification I've held in the past, and it didn't apply to me at all. I should say, though, that, I mean, the bank that I'm talking about with the most recent experience is Chase, so I wouldn't think they would be using someone small for that type of verification.
Bill's Credit Verification Service and Transmission Supply? Right. No, probably not.
Yeah. And
no, I would.
Go ahead, Kevin.
I'd actually try another institution and see what they say. Have you seen your credit reports, the raw data, yet?
No, I haven't. I was going to get on that sometime this month.
Okay, I would try that and see if the information there shows up and says we're doing this. And in terms of the verification process, I would, you know, Chase, all these big Wall Street banks, you might want to look at a local institution as well and just see if they give you the same problem, especially if you're looking at sending credit. My guess is if your credit's good enough for Chase, it's probably good enough for some other institution. And especially if it's one, you know, Milwaukee, you've got probably 100 different places within a 5-mile drive that you can use to get access to credit. So I'd try someplace else, tell them your experience with Chase and say, I'm interested in shopping around for this. Am I going to run into the same problem here? My guess is you won't. So check your local bank or credit union and see if you can get a different response from them. I'm guessing you'll get a little better situation. And then go to that annualcreditreport.com and see if there's some wrong information there that's kicking up these red flags for Chase.
Thanks for the call, Julian. Good luck to you. So, Kevin, what's the website of the week this week?
ConsumerFed.org. The Consumer Federation helps prevent you from being taken advantage of by larger companies and organizations. Really great organization. Lots of good services there and information and publications. ConsumerFed.org. And we'll put a link to that website up at our website, onyourmoney.com, later on today.
All right. Sounds good. Time for four more words before we go.
Spend less, have more.
Kevin McKinley is a certified financial planner and managing member of McKinley Money, LLC. He will be back again next week for another edition of On Your Money. And if you didn't get in today, you can try next week. You can also send an email. Maybe it'll be picked for our On Your Money email bag. And you can send that email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Thanks to Bill Martins, to Cynthia Schuster, and to Amanda Magnus. They produce these programs each and every day. And thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I hope that tomorrow you are with us at this time. And you can put your thinking caps on right now. We are going to talk about what should Wisconsin's official rock anthem be? Or what should our official state song be beyond On Wisconsin? We know we have that fight song as our official state song. We are going to be talking with somebody about picking a new song for the state of Wisconsin tomorrow between 8 and 9. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.